listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa. Today we are in Naturlandia, Andorra.
Cheers, Fran.
Cheers, Rich. To a cracking stage.
Yeah, we are drinking a bottle. Something was lost in translation there because I tried to order a local beer. There's some local Andorran beer on the bar in there. And, I tried to ask for it, but that's not what we've got. We've been given it Estrella.
Well, but Estrella Damm, this is the Catalan beer. So, more or less, you haven't been cheated by anyone.
Well, it's been a day of Catalonia and Andorra, hasn't it? A lot of the stage in Catalonia today. And a lot of Catalonian flags out, a lot of yellow ribbons tied to railings and bridges, and a lot of yellow ribbons painted on the road as well.
So, and a lot of Spanish flags with someone standing by their sides on defiant posts.
The Vuelta a España was hijacked a little bit today by the Catalonians with an expression of regional pride, I suppose. But we're in Andorra now, we're not in Spain anymore. Does it feel like Spain to you, Andorra, or does it feel a little bit different?
It does feel like Spain. I mean, it does feel like Catalonia. Catalonia is different to the part of Spain I come from, yet for me, it feels at most home. You know, I've been quite used to come here every year to watch some Barça game. So I am used to Catalonia and I really enjoy it. With Andorra, I'd say I enjoy that too, especially the part which is into the mountains. It's cracking, it's beautiful.
Yeah, well, you're a bit more enthusiastic about Andorra than Lionel Burney. He's not a fan of Andorra. And you can understand why. One of the reasons for the frustration of Andorra is that your phone stops working the minute you come across the border. Call us shallow, but that is a major frustration. Anyway, today was a cracking stage, penultimate mountainous stage of the Vuelta, potentially a decisive one. A really intriguing one because it was at the equivalent point of the Giro d'Italia that Simon Yates, of course, the race leader, collapsed so spectacularly, lost an hour and 15 minutes over 2 days. So really everybody's looking for clues today as to how he was faring, you know, so deep into the race and with such a small lead over Alejandro Valverde. I saw Joaquim Rodriguez, an Andorran resident. He was commenting on Spanish TV that he thought Yates was in trouble, that he was pouring water over his legs, that he wasn't pedaling smoothly. So everybody was looking for tiny little signs, little indications he might be in trouble. There was a moment today where he was back at his team car collecting a bottle, and you think, why not send a domestique back to get a bottle for you? You know, is there some kind of problem? Is there an issue?
Exactly. I mean, I what's going to ask you about that? What do you make from the fact that Movistar took advantage of this moment where Simon Yates was on the back of the pack to launch the echelons?
I mean, this is kind of my tale of the etapa, Fran. It's very shambolic, really, not with the same organization or structure to it as Lionel has. But it was an aggressive old day. I mean, like yesterday, the break wasn't allowed very much lead at all. Breakaways were Benjamin Thomas from Groupama FTJ, Jonathan Castro Viejo from Team Sky, and Tom Van Asbroek, the sprinter, really, from Education First. He didn't fancy it after a while and sat up or was dropped as the other two pressed on. But Movistar really took the race on today, and it was a great statement of intent. And I think Movistar deserve an awful lot of credit for the way they raced today, even if ultimately their two leaders weren't able to deliver, didn't have the legs. They really took it on in a way that we don't often see Movistar taking it on, making the race. And I'm not sure if they were taking advantage of the fact that Yates had gone back to his team car, although they'd be perfectly entitled to do so because he didn't have a problem. You know, if Yates decides to go back to his team car and they decide to attack at the front, that's fine as far as I'm concerned. There are no rules, unwritten or otherwise, that would stop you doing that. He was back in the bunch by the time they went to the front. There were some crosswinds and they split it. A group of about 25 went clear. Quickstep were there as well, obviously helping Enric Mas, who's in third overall. And for a moment, the race was in pieces and it looked like, you know, Mas and Valverde were in that front group and Yates was left stranded behind. And it didn't last too long. It did come back together, but it was a moment in the race where you thought, wow, everybody's been waiting for the final, you know, huge climb up to the summit here. 17 kilometer climb, steep at the bottom. Everybody was really focused on that, and here was perhaps the race being decided 17 kilometers before the climb. Didn't quite happen, as I say, but it was a moment of excitement. Then on the climb itself, winner Anacona went to the front, set a very fast pace. Nairo Quintana was up there as well, and it was Quintana who attacked, and he got away. And you know, he's a bit further down than Valverde, but it was a decent tactic. And a little group formed at the front. Stephen Kruijswijk was there. George Bennett was there for a while, his Lotto NL Jumbo teammate. And then Thibaut Pinot very impressively jumped up to those guys. But then a bit further on, with 10 kilometres of the climb still to go, even more impressively, Simon Yates took off from that group behind and bridged across very, very easily, really. The climb had levelled off a bit at that point. I think the hardest part of the climb is really at the bottom. But it was a very impressive performance by Simon Yates, who really drove that group, which was Kruijswijk, Pino and him, because Quintana by now had sat up or was dropped. And Quintana had a shocker. He had puncture, he had changed bikes, and Valverde ran out of legs as well near the top. So Quintana and Valverde really struggled in, while Yates increased his lead from 25 seconds to a pretty healthy looking 1:38. And he stands on the edge of winning the Vuelta, although he was very, very, very careful in his press conference after the race not to assume that victory was in the bag. You know, he kept saying that he's very focused on tomorrow's short, hilly stage, and that he knows only too well how it can all change in one day.
From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Thank you very much to Rafa for being our headline sponsor. Their support is most welcome. The poll for Pedler de Charme and the final winner of our beautiful Rafa Pedler de Charme t-shirt is still active, but I think Michael Woods is going to be a very convincing winner of that, so I'll present him with a t-shirt tomorrow. And I'm very excited to follow the progress and hear about the Women's 100 ride tomorrow that the Cycling Podcast Femina is organising, thanks to listener Hannah Nicklin. Orla Chenoui will be there, and so will Rose Manley, who both present the Cycling Podcast Femina with me. And I'm really looking forward to seeing pictures and hearing audio from that and just hearing how it goes. If you still fancy joining a Women's 100 ride, go to rafa.cc, look at Women's 100, and you'll find a whole lot of rides all over the world taking place tomorrow. So Fran, today's stage, Simon Yates, he wouldn't say that he's won the Vuelta, but in your view, has Simon Yates won the Vuelta?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no, because as he said time and again in the press conference, he's the one who knows how things can, how the GC can turn itself upside down in any time. And also because even if we have seen an impressive performance from him today, really a dominant one, tomorrow we have a lot of climbing, you know. This is a very intense stage where a pretty different mix of abilities are going to go to come into play. We are already deep into a third week of racing, deep into the last month of the season. So the energy of any rider in this Vuelta can be depleted anytime.
Well, yeah, but what I think is clear is that this is a very different Simon Yates to the Simon Yates of the final weekend of the Giro, where the collapse was total and spectacular. And while he did lose a little bit of time to Valverde a couple of days ago, you know, he was back on it today, and he looked today like somebody who wasn't going to crack at all. I mean, he looked completely in control when he was in that group at the front with Kruijswijk and Pino, and this was a climb that suited both of those riders really quite well, the second half of it anyway. He looked like the strongest rider there, and he looked completely in control, and Kruijswijk was distanced a little bit at the top. Kruijswijk, should mention, is up to third overall, and you know, he is on the podium at the moment, and that would be a result he's very happy with. He did say that he thinks Movistar will go all out on the attack again tomorrow. They've got nothing to lose now. I mean, it's shaping up to be a disastrous Vuelta for them. They come in with Valverde and Quintana, two of the favourites, and at the moment, well, Valverde's still there, second, but clinging on. You know, he looked in quite a lot of trouble today. And second for Valverde at the Vuelta, as you've said repeatedly, that's not what Movistar came here for.
Yeah, it is not a result that adds anything to him. It is a disappointing one, and above all, one that will make him wonder, especially if he doesn't win in Austria. He will wonder for ages why he didn't let the Vuelta go when he could. Of course, he didn't have any reason to, because he was in contention, and he is, until now, the second guy on the GC. You know, if for any circumstance Yates does crack tomorrow, he will be the virtual leader. So it is far from a foregone conclusion that the Movistar team is going to leave this Vuelta on a disappointing note.
It is, and it sounded there like I was being critical. As I said earlier, I think it's really important to acknowledge when a team, even if it hasn't worked out for them, but a team that has been criticised a lot in the past for their tactics and their lack of imagination, I thought they showed imagination and initiative today, and you know, they made the race really exciting, and they did all that they could to open it up and to put Simon Yates under pressure.
Exactly. I mean, today I heard some words from José Luis Arrieta, Movistar team's head DS on this race, right after launching the Echelons, which failed to succeed. Not because of Mitchelton Scott, but because of Bora Hansgrohe, which did a huge effort in order to close the gap that was forming between that lead group of 25 riders and the rest of the bunch. Arrieta made this point about the fact of both Imanol Erviti and Daniele Venati had nothing to do in tomorrow's stage, because of course they are pure rulers, and since from the first kilometer tomorrow we will be up and down into the mountains, they won't have any role to play. So it was well worth it to spend all their energy on the stage of today. And it was, and that's a fair point. That's about a point about playing all the cards on their deck, which is something that Movistar usually doesn't do. So it was great to put to keep the race lively for the whole stage, and also trying to do this skirmish when Simon Yates, in my opinion, made that mistake of dropping back to the car of the team car. That's something a leader shouldn't do in any race.
Not when there are crosswinds coming up, because the right, you know, they know when the road opens up, when there's a danger, the possibility of crosswinds. Do you think maybe they were just, again, lulled into thinking that this stage was all about the climb, and that really anything that happened before then would be nullified by what would happen on the climb? You know, if he'd reached the bottom of the climb with a 1 minute or a minute and a half deficit, that would have made it a very different race.
Definitely. Another point to comment about today's stage and how important it was, the pace that Movistar team set throughout it, is that we were gaining elevation the whole time, because we were coming from the flatlands in Lerida, in Lleida, to the Pyrenees. So even if the roads were more or less comfortable, and even if the slopes weren't remarkable, we were gaining elevation. Therefore, the riders, more or less we can say, couldn't stop pedaling. And that's another degree of toughness this stage had, besides the final climb, which, do you remember yesterday I said that the final climb was probably going to be disappointing? Well, it shows how much I know cycling.
What do you think about tomorrow's stage, Fran? It's one of these short ones, 97 kilometers long, which is very, very short indeed. And it's the sort of stage we've seen at the Tour de France in recent years produce real excitement. Are we, and I've sort of said this, who's happy now with where they are? Simon Yates is obviously happy. Steven Kruijswijk is happy. Lopez won't be happy. Didn't see much from him today. And Valverde and Quintana are not happy, are they? So really, Astana, Movistar, can we expect fireworks from them tomorrow?
Yes, Movistar is going to go with everything they have, which is not a lot, actually, because you could see today that winner Anacona, when he was setting the pace, there were maybe 30, 40 riders on his wheel. Richard Carapaz wasn't really on his top today.
He's had a disappointing Vuelta, has he not, Carapaz?
Well, he fell ill on the eve of the second rest day. I had a long interview with him this Monday, and he was suffering from a sore throat, and that surely has affected his performance. At this point of the race and of the season, the body is quite weak. And if there is an illness to diminish it even further, then it clearly feels it. And Nairo Quintana today did something pretty much unprecedented. He really acted as a domestic. He really did a good race as a domestic. He lit things up in the GC battle, trying to shake the tree to see if there any
apples would fall.
Yeah, and later, when he was on the head of the race with Kreisbach and Pino, he dropped back to help Alberti, and he effectively did pull for him. So, gotta say, from a rider that it's usually portrayed and usually felt by me and by many other people like a very selfish guy, he was a good team player today, I would say.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Whether you're grinding up the French Alps or just taking your mates on around a local loop, Science in Sport Rego Rapid Recovery Plus will help you recover faster after your ride, so you're ready to go again the next day.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
How's it going, Daniel?
Not well.
Oh, why not? What's wrong?
I've been Andorra'd.
Oh,
been
no.
Andorra'd.
Oh, dear.
I struggled to get off the mountain. Natalandia, I wanted to stay up there all day, all night. The rest of the weekend, it was right up my street, toboggan runs, 800 hectares of adventure playgrounds. You know, lynxes up there, rich lynxes. We didn't even get a chance to see the lynxes, bears. It was magnificent. Alas, we had to come down. It took us a long time to get down off the mountain, a couple of hours, bit of a Tour de France style tailback. And then I've just checked into my hotel room and it stinks of fags.
Duty-free, tax-free fags.
Yeah, and then the hotel's full, so he can't. I can't be moved to another room.
Maybe you go onto my mezzanine level, Daniel, because I've got a big old room. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've got a mezzanine, have you?
No, but last night you were in the Ibis budget, and we were in the Ibis.
Yeah, we were. It was like the same hotel, and it was like going getting an airplane and turning one way for economy and the other way for first class. That I turned right last night.
You were in the bastard sibling.
I was in the Ibis budget with Burgos BH, and you were in the proper Ibis with Team Sunweb and Cofidis.
Yep, and it had a fantastic regenerative effect on Wilco Kelderman today, didn't it?
He went well, yeah. Before we get on with that, I should say thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. We heard their little message there. And you can get 25% off your Science Sport products. I've been testing Fran every night to see if he can remember the code. I'm not going to bother doing that with Daniel because I don't reckon he'll know the code. Daniel? I mean, he zones out. He doesn't even pay attention to rumours of riders moving
again
to teams, but the code is SISCP25, and that's at the website scienceandsport.com, and we are very grateful to Science Sport for their long-standing support of the Cycling Podcast. Thank you. Daniel's just rehydrating here with an Estrella.
Estrella Dam. Very important to say which kind of Estrella.
Sorry.
There are all sorts of different Estrellas.
Okay.
All beers. Right. This is Estrella Dam. That's the one from Barcelona. Not to be confused with the superior, in my view, Estrella Galicia. Carry on.
Daniel, speaking of Valverde, you called it last night. You said that Valverde... Well, you hinted at Valverde having an off day, and he kind of did today.
Yes. He produced a performance very much in line with his Grand Tour record. The race went above 2,000 metres. There was a climb that was longer than 10 kilometres. And he did what he has often done on climbs like that. He was almost asphyxiated by his own team as well. They'd set a pretty fast pace, I think, going into the bottom of the climb. I'm not sure whether they were feeling confident, but they had the great merit of at least being pretty bold today. They made no bones about the fact they were going for the stage victory. They kept the break very close, and the bonus seconds were likely to be very important, particularly with the final climb being very hard at the start, but actually being quite benign in the last few kilometres. So you could have envisaged a situation where there was a reasonable sized group of four, five, six riders there, and Valverde in a position to sprint for bonus seconds. So they did the right thing.
I think they were also testing Yates. You know, Yates would have been haunted by what happened at the Giro, and putting that sort of pressure on him, it was just an effort to break him, wasn't it?
Yes. But they also tried to launch Quintana down the road at the bottom of the climb. He flew out of the peloton like a deflated, punctured football, didn't he? He sort of soared and travelled about 10 yards and then just stopped dead. And he's clearly not got the best legs at the moment.
But that's the point, isn't it? I mean, it's not because he doesn't want to soar away. He doesn't have the legs. And yeah. I said earlier on with Fran, I salute Movistar's efforts today. I think they were bold, and we haven't seen that from them too often, that they've really taken it on. And as Fran pointed out, you know, they had a couple of guys who were able to do something on the flat today who won't be any use tomorrow. They were brave, they were courageous, they took the race to Simon Yates, they wanted to test him, and it might have worked, didn't, but
I mean, I think they were brave, but you can look at it from two different perspectives. You can say that the safest way to play these two Andorian stages was to chance their arm on both days, to give themselves two options.
We haven't had yesterday's stage yet.
Tomorrow's stage yet. But in a way, in playing devil's advocate, you could also say that that was the conservative approach to try on both days. What is potentially a bolder strategy is what Astana promised this morning that they were going to do, and that was stake everything on tomorrow. So all their... Well, I spoke to a couple of their domestiques today, and they said, no, we're not really doing anything today. We're all in tomorrow.
Now, Daniel, what about Thibaut Pinot, the other man of the day? Another great stage win for Pinot. Will he be... I mean, he will be happy with his...
He was thrilled. Vuelta. I mean, he says that he's had a dream Vuelta, which in itself is maybe slightly frustrating to some of his admirers, because on a day like today, he looks like a rider who has all of the attributes a rider would need to win a major tour. And yet, because of various fragilities, I mean, I spoke to him at the finish today, and he said that mentally he didn't go into this Vuelta ready to fight for GC, and which kind of leaves you scratching your head thinking, well, what was the issue? I mean, he hadn't raced the Tour de France. He'd had plenty of time to collect his thoughts after after his problems at the Giro. But, you know, as we've said before with Pino, he goes in almost, and, you know, this is not necessarily a criticism, but he is haunted by various different things almost before he's even got going. So, you know, he goes into a Vuelta that starts in the south of Spain. He's already talking about how the heat might affect him and worrying about that, and he's almost talking himself out of it. And you contrast that with someone like Simon Yates, who I think has been fairly open in the past about the fact that he doesn't love racing in the extreme heat, and it can be a bit of an issue for him, but that doesn't deter him from thinking that he can overcome that obstacle.
Yeah, I mean, Simon Yates just plays everything with a straight bat. I saw him be welcomed at the finish by his girlfriend, a French girl, I believe, his girlfriend. And it was a kind of rare show of emotion and affection, as you'd expect. But we see the mask remains very firmly in place with Simon Yates. He and his brother Adam, they give so little away, and that's their great strength, I suppose. But I just wondered when I watched Simon Yates' press conference tonight, and he was again very tight-lipped, very unwilling to look ahead to tomorrow. Just, you know, a day was another day chopped off. And I thought, at what point will, obviously tomorrow, but what will his reaction be then if he does win? Will we see a jubilant, you know, happy, emotionally, you know, will he show those emotions or not? I don't know. I mean, it'll be curious to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see a lot of emotion in the team, because Mitchelton's a team that for the last 3 or 4 years has been focusing very much on Grand Tours, and this is the kind of, well, they would argue it's the start of a new journey for them, but really it's the end point of a journey for the triumvirate of the Yates brothers and Esteban Chavez. They're the three they've been working with to try and win a Grand Tour, and it looks as though they're going to achieve that goal tomorrow. So I think they particularly, you know, like I said, Matt White, the direct sportif, would be very emotional if he pulled it off.
Fran, there's something else to say about Enric Mas, the young Spaniard who slipped to place the fourth overall today. Fran, Enric Mas, he was on the podium at the start of the day. He's not anymore. Now, forgot to mention him in the talking about which riders will be happy with where they are. You know, if you asked him before the Vuelta started whether he'd be happy with fourth overall, he'd have probably said yes. But having had a taste of the podium, he'll be a bit disappointed maybe with today. Or were you surprised to see him not perhaps more to the fore on that, on the climb?
Well, he's been doing a lot of efforts on this Vuelta. What he said at the finish of the stage was that he would sleep better today because he won't have the pressure of feeling the podium under his feet. But still, he knows Andorra quite well. You know, he used to come training here every year since 3 years ago, if I am not mistaken. So he knows all the roads by heart and will probably try to take advantage of them. It's normal that any rider has a day, an off day, where he doesn't feel that good. He had it already back when he was ill in La Camperona. Today he was not at his best either, but I would say that he has a chance of standing in the podium of Madrid right now, like pretty much everyone else in the top five of the GC, because we can see things shuffle quite dramatically tomorrow.
Don't forget to listen to our morning show, Kilometer Zero, supported by The Economist, Monday, Wednesday and Friday mornings throughout the Vuelta a España.
So we heard there from Fran again, and then a reminder that our Kilometer Zero series is now finished, and I would like to thank Annette Kelly for her wonderful illustrations, which have really brought those 9 episodes to life on social media and so on. She has been illustrating the Grand Tours all year as Grand Tour Art. You'll find them on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, thank you to her. I really liked the illustration today of Vincenzo Nibali winning here in Andorra a year ago, with some of the high buildings and the mountains that dominate this part of the world in the background. So it's 9 illustrations to go with our 9 episodes of Kilometer Zero. And today's final episode was on Andorra, and it included a bit of Lionel Burney moaning about Andorra and some riders. I mean, over 50 World Tour riders live in this small part of the world, all for training and mountains, isn't it, Daniel?
Not really,
and
it's
thin
not,
air.
Is it? It's not entirely all for... It's, you know, we have to be honest about it. It's also for very thin...
Daniel, what are you suggesting?
Regulations.
Yeah, well, that could be part of it. You could be right. Any other business from today, Daniel?
Well, Rich, I thought it was a fantastic ride by Stephen Kreiswijk.
I saw you speaking to him at the finish.
Yes, and, you know, I think he was trying to be realistic when, you know, there's a fairly sizable Dutch press pack here at the Vuelta who've been getting pretty excited, not just about Kreiswijk's ride here, but about Lotto Jumbo throughout the season, and indeed even Wilco Kelderman. You know, things are suddenly looking pretty good for Dutch cycling, especially with, you know, Groenewegen looking as though he's well set to be one of the main players among the sprinters for the next few years. So I think, you know, they're starting to get quite excited about what the next few years might bring. And Kreiswijk has sort of been trying to keep a lid on it, playing it down a bit, playing down his objectives, saying he's already very happy with what he's achieved so far. And in light of that, I thought it was very, very courageous, as Lotto Jumbo have been courageous all summer. They were very courageous at the Tour, to go with Quintana at the bottom of the climb. And you have to say that it worked today, because I'm not sure if he'd stayed in that group, he would have been able to follow Simon Yates when Simon Yates jumped across.
No, and salute George Bennett too, who came into this Vuelta with big ambitions of his own. He wanted to win a stage and to finish in the top 5 overall. Now, today might have been an opportunity to win a stage, and he lives in Andorra, so he probably knows the climb well. But he very much put himself at the service of Stephen Kreiswijk, didn't he, today? And helped him, first of all, to get that gap, to stay with him as long as possible, and then he sat up. Maybe we'll see him tomorrow, but again, he looks perfectly willing to sacrifice himself to help Kreiswijk get that podium. I suppose the question, and they have been very bold and you know, they've got Primoz Roglic as well. Do they have a Grand Tour winner in their ranks? Roglic, maybe. Well, I mean, you can see them certainly finishing on the podium, but do they have one of these guys who can win a Grand Tour?
I made the bold statement the other day, rather thoughtlessly, like a lot of what I say, that Stephen Kreiswijk is among the best riders in the world, best Grand Tour riders not to have won a Grand Tour.
Or
who
finish
else
on the podium.
Would you put in that category, Rich? Simon Yates until tomorrow. Thibaut Pinot, possibly. Roman Bardet.
Yeah, Roman Bardet probably is the one that stands out.
French national team for the Worlds was picked today. How is Cyril Guimard, the French national team manager, going to work out a way to make Julien Alaphilippe, Romain Bardet and Thibaut Pinot combine to the best effect in Innsbruck? It's going to be tricky because Bardet and Pinot, they don't dislike each other by any stretch of the imagination, but the French media has kind of pitted them against each other and they're very, very different characters.
There's a similar scenario though as in a lot of teams, but the Dutch team is one where there's a similar scenario where you've got lots of riders who are potential winners or leaders of that team. And that's one of the great things about the World Championship, isn't it? Who knows? You put me on the spot there, Daniel. I'd like to ask you a question.
You didn't answer it, did you?
Roman Bardet was the only one I could really think of. You know, he's finished on the podium at the Tour de France. I can't really think of anybody else off the top of my head. No. Matthew Burgess emails us, a musician in Nashville. He's sent us some trivia. It's 20 years now since Lance Armstrong's 1998
controversial
fourth
Lance Armstrong
place
to give him his
finish.
Official name.
Yeah. There are still a handful of former teammates of Armstrong in the pro peloton, but most of those are from his comeback 2009-2011. Can you name the only former teammate pre-retirement 2005 that still races on a UCI World Tour team?
While
you're thinking about that, Daniel, why don't we play an interview from this morning with Dave Brailsford, who's back at the Vuelta. He was at the Vuelta week one. He went to Tour Britain. He's back out at the Vuelta. And it's been an interesting race for Team Sky, the only Grand Tour this year that they're not going to win. And some successes, some non-successes, some, you know, I don't know how they'll... Well, I wondered how he looked on it. So I went to ask him about that. And I went to ask him about Eddie Dunbar, who they've just signed, and which gives them 31 riders, which apparently is, you know, one more than the UCI regulations allow. And I wondered how they'd done that. Here's what he said. You've signed Eddie Dunbar. Is he a rider that you've been looking at for a while?
Yeah, I think over recent years, he's a rider that's caught the eye. And we've watched his progression and development closely and kind of like what we see, really. And I think he was developing well and obviously had a pretty good year in winning the under-23 Liège. I thought he rode well in L'Avenir. And really what made our minds up was the fact that when you see one of the smaller teams having a challenging situation and riders kind of being left at the mercy of the whole situation, really, is that actually as a larger team, could we step in and help and support any riders to primarily lend some support? And so we thought about Eddie, and we thought, actually, you know, why couldn't he maybe, if they've got no race programme for the end of the year, it seems a shame for all those riders, just one minute they've got a race programme, next minute they've got nothing. So why not see whether he could ride with us for the rest of the season and take it from there? So we recognised that it was a bit out of the ordinary, and so we approached the UCI and said, look, it's an exceptional circumstance. We're not trying to capitalise on the situation. We're more trying to support and help the situation and make sure at least one of the riders gets his future secured and an opportunity. So it was a bit of to-ing and fro-ing on that front, and in the end we reached an agreement with the UCI that we could take him on board. Given the exceptional circumstance, and I think credit to them, because we're not trying to gain some kind of advantage, we're not trying to break any rules, we're very acutely aware of the rules and all the rest of it, but it's just purely a young, up-and-coming, very talented rider in our sport, not being left by the wayside because of a situation way beyond his control, and we're only trying to step in to help and trying to provide some support for the sport overall. That was the real thinking. So there's nothing untoward or devious or anything else. It's just purely a supporting gesture.
What's it like being here at the Vuelta? You won the Giro, you won the Tour. It's been a very different situation here at the Vuelta where you're not in contention to win it. I guess two things. What's that like for you? And two, even a team as well resourced as Team Sky, you know, it might be impossible to compete to try and win all three Grand Tours. What does that tell us about the demands being put on the teams with such a crowded calendar?
I've really enjoyed my time here. I must say we had a great first week. Obviously we were in New Jersey for a while and it was all great, and I enjoyed particularly the idea of bringing two young riders here who were making a debut in Grand Tour terms in Pavel Sivakov and Teo, and so that challenge was, you know, that was really enjoyable. And I think when you ride Grand Tour to try and win them, it's incredibly focused and intense. And in many respects, it's been great to be here with a group of guys who are very focused, maintain the same standards, and you know they've got their goals within the race, but also a few crashes changed the situation for us quite dramatically. But ultimately, you know, we've been here to learn, and guys have developed, and so I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed it. So yeah, it's been good.
So that was Dave Brailsford telling us how they managed to sign Eddie Dunbar, and also reflecting a little on this Vuelta and the question I put to him about the demands of the World Tour calendar, and how, you know, if a team of Sky's wealth and resources can't compete in all three Grand Tours to win, then does that not tell us that there's just a little bit too much for teams? You know, it's they're all spread pretty thin and they all have to make decisions about what to focus on. But it's, you would think in most sports, you know, you can, if you're one of the best teams in the world, you can contend for all the major prizes, can't you? Is that not how it works?
I think so.
I was trying to Google,
but Andorran internet connection is not my friend. I don't know, Rich. I mean, I hope this isn't a trick. Rephrase the question for me, please.
Well, I'll just repeat it. There's still a handful of former teammates of Armstrong in the Pro Pentathlon. Most of those are from his comeback. Can you name the only former teammate pre-retirement raced with 2005, yes, before 2005,
yes, I can.
2005, that still races on the UCI World Tour team? Who is it?
Fumi Beppu.
You're absolutely right.
I haven't seen him for a long time.
Is he doing any Trek Segafredo?
Is he doing any Grand Tours these days?
Oh, sure. That's good. Good. Thanks for that, Matthew. That was good. Enjoyed
looking. Look, so I'm just looking at his results, Richard.
Not being able to answer that question.
Doesn't look as though he's done a Grand Tour since 2014.
Listen, Daniel, it's
15,
late.
Sorry.
It's late. We need to go and have dinner. We're going to sign off. Just before we go, a reminder that our events in November, tickets are on sale. London on November the 12th, Cardiff on November the 27th. Little boo-boo means that tickets haven't been on sale this week for the London event,
boo-boo.
And people who've tried to get tickets have been told it was sold out. Tickets went back on sale today and there was a surge in ticket sales, so now there are fewer than 100 remaining for the Clapham Grand. So get your tickets at thecyclingpodcast.com, go to live events and get your tickets there, and we'll be there with Amara Terra, the Italian band that provides our soundtrack to the Giro. Yes, Daniel, you'll be there.
So what's the date?
The 12th of November. This is an act.
We've discussed this.
Yeah, we talked about it a couple of days ago.
We haven't discussed the rest of the schedule. Anyway,
thanks, Daniel.
Thanks.